Before we get to the season premiere of The Wiggle Room, I want to tell you about this Monday, the CW is bringing you to the front line of drama with the new military series, Valor. The show features two special ops Army helicopter pilots breaking boundaries and defying all expectations. Their bravery in the face of impossible odds earned them the Distinguished Flying Cross for Valor. But together, they're finding out that truth is the first casualty of war. During their last mission, something went wrong, something no one is talking about, and when they went into the combat zone, not everyone came home. So now they have secrets, but they're also patriots and refuse to leave any man behind. What would you do if you had to break the rules to do what's right? Would you stay grounded and step in line, or go to any lengths to learn the truth? They'll share secrets, go on clandestine missions, risk life and limb only with each other to depend on. How close would you get to the only person who really knows you? It's the explosive new drama that pushes the boundaries between military discipline and human nature. The new series that's right on target, Valor, the world premiere after the season premiere of Supergirl on Monday, only on the Charlie Whiskey, the CW.
Check it out.
Josh.
He's back.
It's October 3rd, 2017, the middle of the day. I'm speaking in my dramatic first one out voice because something inside of me is broken and I can only speak very seriously from this point forward.
There's a man in his pajamas. He hasn't showered in 2 days.
In weeks. In a long, long time.
Downstairs, his wife angrily paces and says, "Why does he have so many glasses upstairs?"
This is eerily close to home. We need to, for both of us, I think. So we should, let's get out of here. Oh, my God. Rob, how are you? Welcome back to my room.
I'm excellent. I'm very excited to be back, kicking off another season of The Wiggle Room with you, Josh Wiggler, the MVP of the Survivor preseason, behind First One Out, the runaway hit preseason preview. And I have to commend you that the final episode of First One Out, I don't think did a good job of setting up what that was going to be. I thought the first one out, okay, it's just going to be, all right, here we are, we're here with the first one out. No, I thought that might have been the best episode of the whole run, and it was like almost 2 hours long.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised at the runtime. You know, towards the end there, like, I thought episodes 5 and 6 might clock in at 60 minutes, and they both pushed close to 2 hours. It's like, damn, okay, I guess we have some things to talk about here. I guess I'm trying to say something. No, it was really, really fun. And getting to hear Taryn take it all for a spin and, you know, take this wild idea that I'd had in my mind for, you know, several months at that point and put that into reality was super fun, super cool. But no, the response has been really, really kind. I've been really, really thrilled and touched by all of that. So I'm just glad it's out there in the universe. And now we can all talk about it, you know, completely spoiler free, unless you haven't seen the first episode, at which point I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah. What are you doing here? What are you doing here?
So also, just one last thing on the First One Out podcast, even if you listen to the interview with Katrina, stick around. I feel like that the last 20-25 minutes is probably the best part of the whole episode. So check that out. Of course, you could hear all those episodes. Go to robhasawebsite.com/firstoneout, spell it out. And of course, you could get everything Josh is doing for The Hollywood Reporter at thr.com/survivor. Josh, I talked to your editor who put all of First One Out together on our voicemail show. Had a great time with Taryn.
I know, I listened to the podcast with Taryn just a little while ago, and as he mentioned, he was coming off of a 2.5 hour Taryn show interview with me.
Oh, wow.
And it was literally 2 minutes before he hopped off with me and hopped on with you. So if he was a little bit burned out, I apologize. I talked his ear off way too much.
No.
That Taryn Armstrong, strong guy. Love that guy. Big fan of that guy. As I told him on the Taran show, he and I have had like no crossover at all in the RHAP universe. He is in his
Big
Brother
corner.
You
steer clear of the Big Brother, right?
You know, I tend to steer away from that. So a big part of the excitement and the fun of this project was getting to know him and really seeing firsthand just how much of a rock star he is. He is such a hard worker and he is shockingly talented. He is a hustler. He's a super nice guy. Really smart. Really saved the project a couple of times, I think. We talked about him and I, we talked about on the show that the second episode of First One Out went through a couple of different iterations that I think he really steered in the right direction. So Taran's the man. I've got nothing but love for that guy. He was great. Oh, he's the best.
Yeah. And the voicemail show already, Josh, is getting rave reviews. One commenter has already posted halfway through, and this podcast is complete trash. I get that you want to include funny bits, but not a complete podcast about vomiting and strip searches. The worst content you have ever released. So a new bar has been reached already in week one of Survivor 35, Josh.
The voicemails for the first episode of Triple H with Taran Armstrong is the worst content you have ever released?
Right. Well, I actually replied, if you think that this is the worst content I've ever released, you are sorely mistaken. I have released many more terrible podcasts than this one.
Oh, yeah. You are new to RHAP for sure. Like, that must have been your first episode.
I covered the quest, okay?
Yeah. You and I podcasted about three episodes of The Strain, Strigoi, before you had to hand it off to Antonio Mazzaro. There's some real stinkers in here along the way.
All right.
You know? It's been bad. It's been bad.
So check that out. Also, we've launched a couple of new wrap-ups for the new Survivor season, the RHAP B&B with Mike Bloom and Liana Boris, and then Why Blank Lost, Why Katrina Lost in this case, with David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis, also available on our wrap-ups feed and our Survivor podcast feed if you missed those. Both were a lot of fun this weekend. But Josh, let's talk about your particular journey because it was an interesting one. You were the person that really held all the cards this Survivor preseason. You had everything coming out with First One Out. You also did these 18 interviews that we aired on Rob Has a Podcast. And I always admire how close you're able to keep things to the vest, that you never slip up, you never break. The thing that I always think is the most amazing is that you went out to Cambodia. You did. I don't know if people just assume that you come back and you tell me anything. You most certainly do not. You went out there to Cambodia. You watched Vetus get voted out first. You and I proceeded to podcast about the final 10 seasons of Survivor in the Evolution of Strategy, available at evolutionofstrategy.com. And we podcast completely about Survivor Blood versus Water. I'm talking about, like, boy, Vetus is pretty good. I think Vetus could do very well in this season. You never even gave me a hint. And I know I'm somewhat oblivious, but I had no idea that Vetus was going to be the first person voted out of this season. And similarly here, you never broke. You never gave me a hint that it was going to be Katrina, even though in my rankings, I did go right to Katrina at number 18 in my power rankings of winning the season.
It's fun to hear people talk about the thing that you know is going to play a different way. And it wasn't just Katrina this time. You know, there were a few things, like a lot of praise for Alan Ball in the preseason. I knew Alan was going to go insane in the first episode, which was an enormous shock to me to watch that happen in real time. To watch, like, the growing love for JP Hilsebeck, at least as a meme, and knowing that he was going to strip down naked in the first episode, that was a huge delight to hang on to for a while. In fact, Rob, the Tribal Council of Survivor Game Changers, where Haley Ford offers to strip down to prove that she did not have an immunity idol, aired after I had seen the Tribal Council.
Wow.
Where the news came out that JP had stripped down naked to make it known that he does not have an immunity idol.
Boy, you're like the three-eyed raven. And I'm not talking about the girl that has everything.
I know what that is. I get it. Yeah. I get it. I believe, Rob, that in your preseason podcast, your off-season podcast with the great Jonathan Krauss about the greatest Survivor in the Buff
naked moments. Yes,
that podcast was born out of a suggestion in the Wiggle Room that this might be a fun off season podcast to have in the books, knowing that there could be a new number one waiting in the future, and potentially even wiggling on the screen, depending on if you look hard enough. So anyway, yeah, this is fun for me. Like, there's a stretch of time in between seasons of Survivor, or once the preseason kicks off and people are just starting to get to know who the castaways are, that everybody's forming their impressions, and I know just a tiny bit more than everybody else, and it is enjoyable. It's highly enjoyable to see where people are getting it right, where people are getting it wrong, and I get to be right for one episode only, and now I get to be so wrong with everybody else moving forward. So it's a blast. I really do enjoy the preseason. I remember that Evolution of Strategy recording session very, very well, because I was sitting on this major bombshell with Vetus, who was my winner pick for that season, who I watched go home in person. And I think that you walked away from that thinking like you were convinced that Abby Maria would be the first one to go. So I did feel good about that, Rob.
And not only that, just says while we're in the Evolution of Strategy mode, you mentioned Alan Ball and how much that he ended up in this first episode going,
I'm definitely going to play the game, which for me is a full tilt sprint.
Full tilt, yes. Sprint.
Yeah.
For Alan Ball.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, full tilt is not a speed that works well for everybody, I think. I mean, I guess it remains to be seen how well it's going to work for Alan Ball, but he's going full tilt. He is going all the way to the max.
Yeah. What can you tell us about your experience there those first 3 days and how it might have been different than what we saw? Because one of the things I thought was interesting in First One Out, as you were on location, that everybody was talking about how, wow, this is going to be a really insane finale. And yes, we had the idol strip search and we had moments, but I thought that it was a little bit of an anticlimactic first episode in having Katrina be the first boot. What were you guys seeing on location that really made you feel like that this was going to be super insane?
Well, I think that was a big part of it, was that tribal council was long and it was just like nonstop Alan spinning his wheels on this one argument and refusing to let it go. And it was really insane to see. And it was especially insane for me to see, having just talked to the guy and walking away from that conversation thinking like he was really level-headed, was going to play a really, you know, cool, measured game, was referencing guys like Jeremy Collins as the people he wanted to emulate in terms of playing Survivor. Like, I just felt really good about Alan as a Survivor player. And then he just flipped out. He just flipped out. He went Alan Balls to the wall and just, you know, completely threw it all out there. And on further reflection and like reviewing the tape, and that's something that I tried to get across in First One Out, like maybe there is some sort of premeditated aspect to this where he was really eager to frame somebody. You know, he really wanted to, he keeps saying, I want to play this game a different way. You're playing differently,
yep.
You know, right now. You're
full
certainly living
sprint.
Up. You're certainly living up to that. You certainly lived up to the framing plot that you had in mind, but it was so intense to see. It was also really funny to watch JP being completely incapable of answering Jeff Probst's questions in any kind of meaningful way. Like the supercut that Taryn puts together towards the end of First One Out, or I guess towards the middle of the final chapter of First One Out, that expresses what it would have been like if JP had been the guy I spoke with at Ponderosa, which was starting to sound like it was a very legitimate possibility. Like, it was really just a medley, a montage of things like that, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and we'll just see what happens, and things like that, and stuff like that. Like, that was the entire tribal council every time it was thrown to JP, even though JP was like at the heart of this conflict. It was great to watch Ben play the game. It was great to hear Chrissy. Even Ashley, I thought, was super measured at that first tribal council. And then, of course, there was Katrina, who was not as quiet, certainly, as she came across in the episode. She outright fought for herself towards the end of that first tribal council, where right before it went to the vote, Jeff makes it clear before anyone goes to vote, he just is kind of explaining the deal of how the voting process actually works. And he says, you know, when I'm done here, if you want to keep the tribal council going, just keep piping up. This is your time. You do what you guys want to do. And as soon as he was done with his spiel, and when he said, does anyone have anything else before we go to the votes, Katrina piped in and, you know, gave her final plea, her final pitch for why to keep her. Cooper. And much as I love Katrina Radke, and believe me, I very much do, having written, written and recorded a 10
she's
hour
your muse.
Ode to Katrina. You know, she certainly was for this preseason, for sure. I've got a lot of love for Katrina. She just wasn't forceful enough, and she refused to name anybody. To me, the entirety of that tribal council, it really did feel like all it would take was for somebody to be like, you know what? Why don't we get rid of Alan? Why don't we get rid of this guy? He is acting insane right now. And I really thought Katrina might go there. She didn't go there, and it goes the way that it ends up going. So just watching that play out in real time was enthralling. It was exciting. I do think that the episode did a great job of keeping you in that same seat of, like, you're not really sure where the vote is going to go. And I even tweeted out right before the vote was revealed just to see, like, you know, what everybody was thinking. Who do you think is going home right now? Nobody said Katrina. I did not get a single Katrina from anybody. And I think going into the episode and going through the preseason, you do look at Katrina Radke as somebody who could be the first one out. Unfortunately, that just happens a lot of times to the older woman character. Like, that's just something that you've seen a lot in Survivor history. So she's got to be in the conversation as a possibility. But going through the episode, you're not really suspecting it at all. But I think that's also because you aren't really seeing her at all. And she is rather under edited. She's rather underseen in this episode. And I think I get it. You know, you only have 60 minutes to tell this story. Not even, you know, it's 40 some odd minutes for the actual episode. She's not going to have any impact on the story moving forward from this. And whatever is happening with Chrissy's story, it matters more to focus on her than to focus on the relationship with Katrina, especially as Katrina has revealed to me, to you, to everybody who's interviewed her, that the closeness between her and Chrissy, it wasn't really there. So I get it that she wasn't important to the story overall. I wish that this episode had been 90 minutes. I wish that this episode had more time to really spend with all of these different characters and all these different castaways. I think a lot of interesting strategy was happening at the Hustler's Beach as well with Devin and Ryan that we can talk about if you want, that I don't think really got its fair shake in the episode. But who knows? Like, they're telling the story that they want to tell. They've got their reasons for shaping things the way they want to shape them. I really just think if you've got a new player season, I really think it benefits the audience and it benefits the storytelling and it benefits everybody if you supersize that first episode, just to get everybody on the same page with who these castaways are. A great compliment that I did hear was, like, our coverage, you know, between you and I talking through all these people or first one out or whatever, really helped you feel like you knew the players coming into the episode. And that's great. But, you know, it would be great if the show helped you feel that way, too, if, like, you aren't engaging the preseason stuff.
Yeah.
And I have no gauge for that, having been so deeply in the trenches myself.
And to be fair, I think that if that was a call that Jeff or Matt Van Wagenen was going to make of, should it be a 90-minute premiere? Should it be a two-hour premiere? I think that they would certainly err on the side of longer premiere. That's a network decision. And I think that big part of that comes from where, in years past, where they were able to do a 90-minute Big Brother finale following a 90-minute Survivor premiere, that makes sense to fill a three-hour programming block. I think if you do a 90-minute premiere, I think then it's tough to fill that half hour between 9:30 and 10. And so
totally.
It's a little bit of a no man's land to put like a 30-minute comedy in that spot. So there's a lot of decisions that go into that. I just want to ask you before we get to what was going on with the Super Idol. When you go to Tribal Council, Josh, and you are there as a member of the media, do you have a sense of what's going to happen at the Tribal Council? Like, is there any expectation for you? What are you thinking in terms of who's going to go home when you're sitting there?
You know, you hear whispers around location. People are talking about, you know, their theories, their hunches. They're talking about, like, little scraps of information they've heard along the way. I really try not to know too much other than, like, maybe who are a couple of people that are in trouble or what are a couple of things that have happened so that I can follow along with that stuff. But I really don't want to know who's going. I really want to watch that unfurl. So going into this tribal, what I had heard was that there had been an incident, you know, a night or so earlier between Alan and JP, and there was this suspicion of JP and Ashley, and that Katrina had been a little bit on the outs as well, that she had come out the gate fairly strong talking to some of these people, and she fesses up to that during that first tribal council. You don't really see that on the show. So that was about all that I knew. Like, I knew that Katrina was somebody who was potentially in the hot seat. seat. I was shaking in my boots that JP was potentially somebody in the hot seat. And then watching the tribal council go, I started really thinking throughout the tribal that Alan might be the first one out, and that would be insane to me. So nothing locked in, but some hunches, a little bit of intel, but nothing concrete watching that first tribal council.
Okay, so in terms of this super idol advantage that Ryan had to play, that's been another big thing people are talking about with this episode. Now, obviously, you knew that it was going to be in play. What was your perspective on what was going on with that idol advantage? Not from the episode, but from when you were on location.
From when Ryan had it, I mean, you know, in talking through what the super idol was, like, I got to hear firsthand from Probst and from Van Wagden kind of like what the, you know, possible expectations of the idol were, or the possible uses of the idol, I should say. You know, it's only good for that first tribal council. It has to be at that first tribal council. You know, if somebody from the winning tribe grabs it, it has to go to somebody on the losing tribe, so that it's physically there. And then once it's at that tribal council, if it's not played, it's inactive, but it's still physically in the game. So I was really excited because as soon as I heard about the super idol, at least this thing is going to go off in this first episode, or it's going to get depowered in this first episode. It's not like there's going to be a super idol that is hanging around all season long, starting with the first episode, which would be a nightmare. That would be a disaster. That would be a terrible, terrible thing to do.
Not good.
But what I do think is really, really cool, and I hope we see it play out on the show, is that there is this other possible utility to this artifact, that this idol is not an actual idol, but it is a Survivor Art Department manufactured fake immunity idol.
Counterfeit.
You know, it is a counterfeit, but it is created by the people who create everything. So if you look at that thing in person, you are going to be 1,000,000% convinced that it is real, that it's legit. And unless, you know, you're thinking about possible, you know, fake idol kits from Survivor Game Changers, and I think that people are probably more hung up. I do think that the Heroes, Healers, and Hustlers had seen that episode. I think that was the last episode they saw before they started the game, because that's the same episode where Sandra goes home, right? Where Debbie goes to the quote-unquote Exile Island, the USS Exile Island.
Yes.
And she's given the possibility of a fake idol kit. But it's not used, and I don't think that's the thing you're remembering so much as you're remembering Sandra. So maybe it's a little bit in their consciousness that this could be a thing, like some real-looking fake idol. But I doubt it, and I love the idea of there being this fake idol that is physically in the game, physically in somebody's possession. It's not going away. Chrissy still has that in her bag for sure, and she could potentially use that as some kind of bluff. And then, like, the possibilities of how you bluff with that, that's fairly limitless as well. Like, there's some good ideas, I think. There's some very bad ideas of how you could utilize that. But I just love this idea of this being in the game, and also it possibly being the seed of a cross-tribal alliance. You know, we pine for the days, Rob, of the could it have happened? The Exile Alliance on Token Chains. Could have been a very different season of Survivor Token Chains if that had come together, of these two different groups of alliances across Jalapau and Timbira coming together over this information of idols found at Exile Island and taking over the game together at the merge. Could something like that possibly be in the works here through Ryan and Devin deciding on Chrissy as the person to get this idol, and now it's depowered and she has this fake idol? It would be super cool to see. So I was just very excited about that as a strategic possibility.
Okay, so when I was speaking with Taryn on the voicemail show, he got into a little bit about the plot that Ryan and Devin had come up with. Can you explain a little bit more about what they were thinking?
Sure. So my understanding of it is that Ryan had, you know, tracked down Devin as his guy. Devin and Ryan were going to be, you know, strategically on the same page. They're both fans of the show. And maybe it wasn't completely apparent in my preseason interviews with Devin, but Devin really does know Survivor, or at least he really does watch Survivor. He watches it enough to know that the Heroes and Villains season had red buffs for the villains, and in those opening moments of getting to the beach during the marooning and after the Hustlers bombed so badly during that first challenge, he gets to the mat, and everybody gets to the mat, and there's like a little bit of a sense of dejection among the Hustlers, and Devin is thrown a question of like, why are you guys feeling so dejected? And he's like, well, we're not probably thrilled that we're like being looked at as the villains of the season. You're calling us hustlers and you're giving us red buffs. And that's like usually the buff you give to the bad guys, which I don't know if that totally lines
up. Yeah, he's watched enough Survivor to know that the villains wore red buffs, but not enough Survivor to know that there's actually been a lot of tribes that wear a red buff. So it really doesn't mean anything.
Like, it doesn't totally hold up, but I think like it's enough of a signal to anybody else who plays the game that at least like this guy who doesn't look like he watches a lot of Survivor has watched season 20, if nothing else, like did more homework than just like the watch these, you know, most recent seasons. So I think that that must have been some kind of a signal to Ryan that maybe this is a guy that I can trust, because certainly him going to Devin does not align with where his head was at in the preseason. He was more inclined to work with a guy like Patrick, and he ends up sharing this information with Devin. And their plan, as far as I understood it and still understand it, was they knew the possible utility of the idol, that it has to either go off at that first tribal council or it's going to be depowered and potentially still in the game as a fake artifact. And they wanted to find somebody who was going to make it through the first tribal council without getting targeted, without having to play it, so that they could potentially have this bluff in the game. And so Ryan and Devin would know about this potential bluff in the game. And should a shake happen, like should a swap occur and they wind up on the same tribe as the person they've given this thing to, they can come to that person and say, hey, we got this thing over to you because you look like an attractive ally. Let's see if we can do some stuff together. We know you have the thing, yada, yada, yada.
What?
So they identified a couple of people. I'm blanking on who it was on Healers. I think it may have been Desi was the person that they were looking at Healers as somebody who was not going to get voted for, that just on their hunch was somebody who was going to make it out of this thing okay. And they also identified Chrissy. And a lot of the popular thinking has been they gave this super idol over to Chrissy because she puked at that tribal at that first immunity challenge.
In fact, I believe that's the exact reason why Ryan won the fishy this week.
Is that right? Well, so that would be, you know, I'm sure Ryan is thrilled that he has the fishy, but it would be credit given for the wrong thing.
Pull it away.
Pull it away, or at least, you know, put it on hold and maybe reevaluate the reasons to give it to him. And I know exit interviews are not canon, but what I witnessed with my own two eyes, I will tell you, I observed this. Chrissy threw up after the Healers and the Hustlers were gone already. The Healers leave first. The Hustlers then walk down this big set of stairs that leads them away from the puzzle. And as they are walking away from the site of the challenge, you see, or I saw, Ryan and Devin very quickly confer with each other, give each other a little bit of a fist bump, and they kept walking by as if like just like to reconfirm what their plan was. And then once they were gone, that is when Chrissy booted. So Chrissy did not throw up in front of any of the other tribes. That did not happen that way. So Ryan and Devin had already targeted Chrissy as somebody who they thought was going to survive the Heroes Tribal Council, would hang on to that idol, and would potentially be a prospective partner down the line in the occasion of a swap or if they all make it to the merge together.
Okay. Now, when you were at Tribal Council, did you know Chrissy was now the holder of this super idol?
Yeah, I was aware of that.
Was there any expectation in your mind that she was going to potentially play it and save Katrina?
No, it felt to me like it was going to go unplayed. It felt to me like Chrissy was going to hang on to this thing, that Chrissy was not in danger. I didn't sense that she was in any trouble at all. I had no idea about, you know, the whole mom squad thing, because I don't think that it was really much of a thing. But it also, I don't know, I don't think that it makes sense to play it at the first tribal council. I think to play that at the first tribal council, unless you absolutely have to, it's a slam dunk way too early. Like, you're just dunking way too fast and just being too flashy too quickly. I think you want to hang on to that and have a little bit of collateral down the line, unless you really need to save somebody. And I don't think Katrina was somebody that Chrissy really needed to save. I think Katrina was somebody who, by all accounts, on that tribe was deemed expendable. And Chrissy even voted for Katrina. So no, there was no expectation on my part that she was going to play the thing. And the excitement all came down to the fact of like, all right, so what is going to happen with that thing? Is that going to, you know, is there going to be some sort of epic fake idol moment coming up later on down the line in the season? And I'm on the edge of my seat like anyone else at this point, wondering how that's going to play out.
Now, you went and visited Katrina at Ponderosa. I believe this is a first for you, going to do a interview with a contestant voted out at Ponderosa. What was that experience like for you?
It was intense, or at least like it was intense leading up to it. That was really the crux of the pitch, was like, I feel like, you know, what I get out of my visits to Survivor is I get to watch the first episode of a given season live. I get to watch the whole thing play out as, you know, as much access as I'm given to. I get to go to the tribe beaches, and even if that's not the stuff that's going to make it into the episode, I get a little bit of a sense of how they're living. I get to watch that first challenge. I get to watch the marooning, and I get to watch that tribal, and I see somebody get voted out. And that's, you know, that's what you get when you go out as press. And to me, it felt like a really interesting idea to follow that person's story all the way, and to speak with that person so quickly after it's happened and get what I assumed would be like a fairly raw emotional interview with this person who's put so much on the line in order to play this game, has, you know, sacrificed a ton of time, you know, a ton of your personal life to come out here and play this game that in many of the cases of these castaways, they've been really dreaming about forever. Not everybody, but for many of them, and certainly for Katrina, who applied, I believe, back in season two of the show and has applied a few times since then. So she's really wanted to do this for a long time. And I knew that she had intense energy, and I knew that she wasn't really considering herself a first one out target based on what she had told me, that she was really going to live this moment by moment and not think too far ahead. And she wasn't somebody who I felt was going to have a ton of success in the game for those reasons. Somebody who I liked a lot, but not somebody who I necessarily felt was going to really, really kill it as far as being, you know, a strategically minded player who was going to have a lot of success in that regard. And so I felt attached to Katrina. I feel attached to all of these people because I just like people.
Even they were JP?
You know, I think that JP's hilarious. I look forward to our exit interview whenever that happens, whether he's the winner of the thing or he's out next week. You know, I just felt a connection with all of these people. And so I was going to feel bad about it pretty much however it shook out. But with Katrina, I felt, you know, sort of like this extra sense of like, I don't know how this is going to go. So it was an intense hour-long boat ride out there. It was like an intense 20 or so minute period of her not showing up yet and just kind of waiting to see what her energy was going to be like. And then she sat down across from me and was so okay. She was so at peace. She was hilarious. She was laughing. She had great memories of her 3 days out there. She was, of course, bummed. It was a bummer that she went out first and she wanted to play more of the game and she wishes that she could have. But she had such a good attitude about it of like, look, you know, a tribe loses the first challenge. They have to vote somebody out first. It was me. That's it.
It was me.
It was me. And I found it to be completely unlike what I was expecting. I don't know if I was expecting tears or anger or just like total disbelief, but she was very present. She was super coherent. She was very funny. She was herself. She was the same person that I had met a few days earlier. And I was extremely inspired by that. I thought that that was incredible. And I thought that it really affirmed to me the idea that, like, you know, one of the reasons you could think of for not wanting to put yourself out there and even go through the Survivor application process, even if you've dreamed about it, and even if you think you would be pretty good, you know, pretty good at the game, would be, oh God, it would just suck so hard to go out first. It would be terrible. It would be the worst thing ever. And then to walk away from talking to Katrina, like, it really did affirm to me, like, no, it wouldn't be the worst thing ever if you don't let it be the worst thing ever. At least you got to see Survivor for 3 days. At least you got to live it for 3 days. Don't let this one thing define you. You are much more than this one experience. So I thought that it was a really powerful takeaway, walking away from that interview with Katrina. And to me, it felt like, it felt to me, not that I would ever apply to be on Survivor other than the one time I did it, you know, a decade ago. But for anyone who does really want to go out there, and anyone who does really fear that potential nightmare scenario, that worst case scenario outcome, that there is this other way of thinking about it, that like, at least you got to see it, at least you got to live it, and you are much more than this. So why not chase that dream? Why not chase that goal? And for that to kind of be like the ultimate, you know, flag in the ground for her first one out, I thought it was really fun. She really, you know, her attitude completely crystallized the vision of what I was hoping to go for with first one out in ways that I couldn't have even anticipated.
Right. And the thing about being the first one out of Survivor is that it's a very first world problem of, oh, I got voted out first on Survivor. Oh, my life sucks. Yeah. You know what?
Totally.
You know, get a grip. Get a grip. There's a lot of worse problems in the world.
Yeah, and that's exactly her attitude, you know, effectively. So I thought that was great, and I completely agree with you. It was great to get to see Ponderosa with my own two eyes, and it was great to see Katrina in such high spirits. And something that I'm really happy about and excited about, you know, as much as you can be happy or excited about anyone's demise in Survivor, is that Katrina is the queen of pre-Ponderosa, of pre-merge Ponderosa, at least, and she will be there to welcome these people as they come off the show earlier than they expected. And I think that she is a good tone setter. You know, you talk about who's the foreperson of the jury and how they set the tone for the jury. We don't really spend a lot of time thinking about who's the foreperson of the pre-merge castaways. Who's the person in charge of setting the tone at Ponderosa before that pre-merge vacation? And I think that whoever comes off of the show in the next few weeks, they've got a great team captain in Katrina Radke.
Just going back to Katrina for one final thing, that you were in the unique position that you talked to all 18 players before the game. You asked them a lot of questions about who do you think is going to be the first one out? Who's making a weird impression at Ponderosa? Who's not sitting with you well? Who do you want to work with? You also got to go out there. You were on the beach at one point. You're seeing things play out. You were at the tribal council. If you had to do a breakdown in terms of what percentage of Katrina's downfall was made in the impression she made before the season started and what impression that she gave off post the start of the game, could you do that breakdown?
Yeah, I don't think that it was like universally negative towards Katrina by any stretch of the imagination. And I think a bunch of the people who called their shot that Katrina could go first, they actually weren't even on her tribe. Chrissy was. Chrissy called it. Chrissy said, I think that she's the first one out. And she was right, obviously. Look, she has an intense energy about her. As I said in First One Out during my interview with Katrina before the Ponderosa interview in the second chapter, I had such a good time talking to her. But I could imagine what that might be like if you were living in the dirt and the grime for 3 days, for 39 days if you're Katrina and you're lucky, that could be like emotionally exhausting. Like, it's a lot of energy to track. So I'm not surprised to have heard the reports that Katrina came out a little bit strong with some of these people. Apparently came on a little strong to Ben Driebergen, is something that I heard at that first tribal council. That's not a big surprise to me. But I do think that there are other versions of how the tribes could have been divided where Katrina doesn't do as poorly, doesn't go out first. I think that, you know, if you find Katrina on the healers tribe instead of, I don't know who makes the shift over to her spot on heroes, I think that she's not in such a bad position there. It seemed like she and Cole had something going on. It does seem like the two of them liked each other in the pregame based on what I observed. I think that there were people out there that she could have connected with. And she says that to me at Ponderosa as well, where she's like, literally all of the people I did not feel like I connected with, I was on a tribe with. Like, those were the people that I was stuck with. I don't think it helps either that she is one of two 46-year-old women on her tribe. There is that unfortunate bias, I do think, against, if you've got like a tribe filled with young bucks and you've got these two people who you can obviously target for any reason, I think that you're in trouble. And I do think you see historically that this is the type of person that goes out first. And I don't like that, but it is what it is. So I think that there was just a lot that was working against Katrina here. I think a lot of it had to do with her energy. I think a lot of it had to do with her being just an easy first go. And the other people on her tribe, with the exception of Chrissy, who, you know, I don't know, you know, for all of her strengths, I don't know if she's going to be a challenge beast or anything like that. But I think Katrina was just the easy target for a first vote.
Yeah.
As much as I love her, I think I probably would have shot a vote her way as well.
Right. Eccentric, middle-aged female, does not have the best track record at the first tribal council.
It sucks. And I mean, like, you know, God bless her. Chaos Cass had a great tweet about that on the night of the premiere, that like, if you have any doubt that being like, you know, the in your 40s mom type is the hardest position to play in Survivor, look no further. And I think there's a lot of wisdom to that, unfortunately. So yeah, I think there was a lot working against Katrina. I don't think that her tribe breakdown did her any favors for one, the energy being another thing. And it's, you know, just an easy go if everybody's on the same page.
We got a lot still to do here in the Wiggle Wiggle Room, including a game for Josh Wiggler. But before we get to that, let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are friends over at Pro Flowers. And of course, Josh, it's fall. And if you want to cheer somebody up, especially you want to like make Katrina feel better, not that she needs it, you can send them a gorgeous bouquet of flowers that are perfect for fall from Pro Flowers, because the Pro Flowers has the perfect gift for anyone excited about the fall. A long-lasting bouquet in their favorite fall colors. Josh, do you like the fall?
I love the fall. The buttery browns, the buttery golds, the autumn leaves, the lattes, the pumpkin spice.
Pumpkin spice.
The apple pies.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people are saying...
No pumpkin, no.
No, but say yes, pumpkin, yes. Because
yes, pumpkin, yes.
Break out your pumpkin spice candles and get ready for the best-selling cinnamon cider roses, a great option for birthdays, anniversaries, any fall occasion, or go with the classics like 100 autumn blooms or a dozen autumn roses. You can't lose no matter what, because we've got a discount for 20% off any Pro Flowers unique bouquets of $29 or more. Pro Flower bouquets are guaranteed to stay fresh for at least 7 days or your money back, and you control the delivery date. I mean, Katrina couldn't even say that about her Survivor stint, right?
Wow.
She couldn't.
Come on. Come on.
Come on. 7 days guaranteed. Pro Flowers gives you more bloom for your buck, more Liana for your buck even, big, beautiful flowers, more stems for your money, and long-lasting freshness. Get 20% off all your bouquets of $29 or more. Go to proflowers.com. Use the promo code REALITYTV. That's two words, reality space TV at checkout at proflowers.com. Promo code REALITYTV. Get 20% off your order of $29 or more. Josh, I've got a lot of stuff for you to do here, but before that we get to that, can you just quickly give us the story of how you, like Chrissy, ended up puking on your run through of the first challenge?
Well, I didn't actually puke. I was super close.
You came close.
So if you know me at all from any of these podcasts, it should come as no surprise that I am not exactly athletically inclined. I prefer my competition to be in the form of power watching television
and
Final Fantasy and power eating pizza, you know, real like, you know, it's just like, you know, couch dwelling stuff. Anything I can do from the comfort of my couch, I'm pretty happy. And so the Survivor challenges, when you get out there as press, you get to run those, you get to test them out, and it's super fun. It is so outside my wheelhouse. It is not what I do, and I really don't do any kind of like training leading up to it. Like guys like Gordon Holmes, who, you know, Gordon takes this stuff
super serious,
very, very seriously, very, very seriously. He's got a win record to protect. You know, he'll do a lot of like exercising and getting ready in the lead up. The most I'll do is like, I'll stop eating pizza for like 2 months before I go out there. I'm like, all right, let's try and drop a little bit of weight that way. But that's the best that I'll do. I did not do a lot of prep for 35 at all. I was, you know, in pretty bad condition. And I ran that challenge, which is a very physical challenge. It was super, super fun, but not, you know, in my comfort zone at all. But as I'm running it, I'm like, I'm doing okay. Like, I got up the cargo net super fast. I got to the puzzle fairly quickly. I'm lugging this thing up this A-frame, and we're going to do the puzzle, and it's going to be great. And as we're like not even quite halfway up the A-frame, and we're pulling up this cart that has our puzzle on it, I'm just like, oh God, this is bad. Yeah. This is very physically strenuous and terrible and difficult. And so I got to the top of the thing, and I was supposed to do the puzzle. But as soon as we got to the top of the thing, like, I immediately felt like I was just going to Ralph all over the place. I really thought I was just going to throw up everywhere. And so I vocally exclaimed, somebody else do the puzzle. I think I'm going to puke, which Matt Van Wagenen enjoyed tremendously.
And tweeted about.
And lo and behold, you know, 2 days later, somebody actually does that challenge and pukes. And not only that, I was in the blue dream team. Like I was in the heroes spot for the dream team challenge. And we had the same exact puzzle that the heroes had. And then 2 days later, Chrissy threw up. So That was great. Yeah. It was great to just kind of watch that happen.
Your dream team simulation of that challenge, what position were you in terms of picking out that maze?
I didn't have much of a say in that. The squad felt very strongly that that was the right maze to go with.
Okay, because that's been a controversial pick. A lot of people say, no, the healer's maze that they picked, that was actually, that should have been the number one pick.
I think that the healer's maze is really difficult if you don't know what you're doing and if you don't have steady hands. It is a straight shot, but there's a lot of different spots to fall off there, and I do think that that's challenging in its own right. And I don't think that Dr. Mike is getting enough credit for the fact that, like, he really was the guy who just, like, aced it, like a true surgeon, you know, just, like, kind of had that surgical precision for it. So Dr. Z, way to be. I think that it's, you know, in the right hands, I think that it's not a puzzle that you can, you know, in the right hands, I think it's a puzzle you could really kick its ass in. But I think the logic for my dream team, for my squad, for my tribe, was that this was more traditional, that there's a lot of different opportunities to, like, get around corners and just, like, a lot of different options, like a lot of different possible paths that you could follow, a lot of different ways that you could possibly solve the thing. It was very fun to do. Once I cleared up, you know, my vomitousness, I was able to get a crack at it, and I got to close it out. It was very fun. I got all the glory, none of, like, the real heartache on my end. It was very fun to do.
Okay. So, Josh, I have another challenge for you. Now, hopefully, God, this challenge won't result in you wanting to puke or actually puking.
All right. Well, I drank a lot of coffee this morning. I'm on my fifth cup right now. So I don't know about puking. Well, let's see what happens.
Okay. So we have a game for you this week. Okay. And this is a game inspired by a game that has been played on Big Brother. I hope that's not going to be a turnoff for you, but
I'm okay. I'm all right.
All right. Let's play a round of
I can get loud too. What the f-
Okay, Josh, in this game, you are the person that you are intimately familiar with all of the survivors. So we are going to play you a clip of one of the survivors talking with a specific word bleeped out of the sentence. We're going to give you two choices, and then you just need to complete the sentence from the given survivor, okay?
Oh my gosh, okay. I feel like I'm ready for this. Let's give it a whirl. I feel like I know these voices pretty well at this point, so let's put that to the test too.
First up, we have a example question for you just to see how the game is played. Okay, so here is your sample question.
He had JP strip off clothes last night.
Wow.
To check for an assist.
Okay, so Josh, that did Ashley say A, idle, or B, advantage?
Okay. Replay the clip for me one last time. She just goes through it so fast. I just need to hear the phrasing again.
He had JP strip off the clothes last night.
Wow.
To check for an assist.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. To check to see if you have a bleep. I feel like it's got to be idle. Like, I don't think people are defaulting to advantage. And certainly Alan's accusations were all centered on JP and Ashley having an idle specifically. So I'm going to go with idle. Final answer.
Okay.
He had JP strip off his clothes last night.
Wow.
To check for a non-existent idol.
You took your clothes off to prove you don't have an idol.
Yeah, it's all part of the game, there's things like that.
Yeah.
It's all part of the game, Rob.
Things like that.
And things like that. How about things like that?
So we have not talked a lot about Rourke yet in episode number one in any of the podcasts. So let's correct that. And so Rourke,
let's put this car in Rourke right now.
Rourke was conjuring up our good friend and fellow know-it-all, Stephen Fishback, in this clip from the Getting to Know Rourke segment. Let's go ahead and try to fill in this pair of blanks.
I don't want to pull, like, a Stephen Fishback in Cambodian, like, I don't need to, like, whip out on day one. That's a bad, bad idea.
Okay, what was a bad idea? Which two-word phrase followed by a second word was it? Does Rourke not want to cause panic and pull out advantages, or recite poetry and pull out Rilke?
Pull out what?
Recite poetry and pull out Rilke.
pull out Rilke?
Yes.
Rilke Nelson?
Rilke Nelson, yes.
I mean, that is a thing that Stephen did in Cambodia that we don't remember, or certainly we don't talk about it a lot, because it was kind of odd that he had smuggled Rilke Nelson onto the beaches of Koh Rang. Maybe, I don't know if that made it into the edit. That might have just been something I observed. Anyway, I'm going to assume, what is Rilke? What even is Rilke?
That you doesn't no come answers? With the choice, Josh. It's A.
It doesn't come with the choice. All right. Well, there's no use crying over spilled Rilke. So I'm not going to cry over it or choose it. So I'll go with option A, just because I have no idea what a Rilke is. And I got to imagine it's just a glorious typo.
I don't want to pull like a Stephen Fishback in Cambodia and like recite poetry. I don't need to like whip out Rilke on day one.
Wait, what? You don't need to what?
Whip out Rilke.
What?
Rilke.
You don't need to pull out what?
A Rilke.
That Rilke is a poet, according to Google. He is known as Rainer Maria Rilke. He's a Bohemian Austrian poet and novelist. Widely recognized as one of the most lyrically intense German language poets.
Oh, my God. Well, A, I'm
you
an
just
idiot.
Got Rourke.
Am an idiot, and B, Rourke, you're a nerd. You're a
I
nerd.
Also did not do justice to the pronunciation.
thanks for nothing, Rourke.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Busting out the Rilke.
Yeah, why is it Rilke? It's not Rourke, right?
Oh, my gosh. Well, and also, he wasn't reciting poetry on day one.
No, that didn't happen on day one either. That didn't happen on day one. Okay.
No. All right. Okay. All right. Swing and a miss.
All right, Josh. Let's get to know a person that you and I were both high on from the preseason. This is from the Getting to Know Jessica video.
We have three really tough looking girls, two tough guys, and a like, I really don't think that I could have been on a better tribe.
Okay.
Oh my God. Before you even say anything, like just like the out of context bleeping really does some damage here, because I gotta imagine she's talking Dr. Mike right now.
Okay. Did she describe the missing member of her tribe as A, a survivor nerd, or B, a brainiac?
Oh, okay. I do think that she would call Mike a brainiac. She was really talking a lot about brainiacs in the preseason. Something that got cut from the preseason coverage was a little back and forth between Jessica and I, where she thought at first that Mike might be a robot engineer. That he might be into robotics.
Wow.
She thought that he might be the inventor of the Terminator.
Yeah. Okay.
How about that? Speaking of which, I mean, Cole Meadows kind of looks like a 1984 Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
Like you could imagine him just like transporting down, you know, from Judgment Day into the past. And, you know, the visuals, they create themselves. Anyway, I think that Mike Zahalski is a brainiac in Jessica Johnston's opinion.
We have three really tough looking girls, two tough guys, and a brainiac. Like,
yes,
I really don't think that I could have been on a better tribe.
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. So you're 1-1.
Okay.
And now for the win, Josh, here we go.
I believe I'm 2-1.
Well, the first one was, we said that was a practice.
No, it was just bonus.
That was just
bonus.
To sort of get the, you know, get the rust off. Okay.
All right. Okay.
This is for all the marbles.
I can't imagine preparing more for this journey. I've learned how to, which I'm not very good at.
Okay.
Okay.
What did Mike learn how to do that he's not very good at? Did he A, learn to throw, or B, learn to dive?
All right. He did learn how to dive, and he did learn how to throw. But if it's just like, I learned how to throw, which I'm not very good at, I feel like he would specify. He did like learn how to like throw beanbags into targets. That was part of Dr. Mike's training. Was he trained for the carnival game aspect of Survivor, which I think is inventive and underrated? Doesn't hurt to be decent at that stuff if it's not in your wheelhouse. So I know he did that, but I also know that he took private swimming lessons leading in to this experience, and that he prepared for that fairly thoroughly. And I feel like you could leave the sentence that I learned how to dive, which I'm not very good at. Then again, He said like he's good at like getting into the water, but he's not quite diving, but he's not belly flopping anymore anyway. I'm just going to go with dive and hope that he didn't just like awkwardly say throw and leave the rest of it out. Though it's not impossible that he did that, but let's go with dive. I'm going to dive into the diving option.
I can't imagine preparing more for this journey. I've learned how to dive, which I'm not very good at.
Okay.
Yes. My ride or dive.
Yes. All right. So you are the master of knowing these survivors backwards and forwards, even when they're bleeped, Josh.
Even when they're bleeped. Yeah. Well, we didn't do any bleeping in First One Out, though we flirted with the idea. We just let all of that run in its NSFW glory.
Yes. People loved it. Okay. Well, well done, Josh.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Rob. I appreciate it.
And then, Josh, you have time for one last quick thing. We got more quick game for you. We're working on some games for you this season.
Oh, my God. I love games. Yeah. Let's do it. Another brain buster here.
Yeah. Also, shout out to Randy K for the What the Bleep game. We got
love you, K.
So the Wiggle Room team wanted to hear you play a round of Strip, Flash or Dash, okay?
Oh, God, okay.
All right.
All right, can I just... So a strip would be like full nude for an extended period of time.
Yes, stay
a
nude.
A flash would be just like a quick reveal of nudity.
Yeah.
And then to dash would be to run away from the nudity at all costs. You do not want to see the nudity whatsoever.
Yeah, and run away.
Yeah, that's me running away.
Okay, all right. And again, you are the person who is stripping, flashing or dashing.
Oh, so I'm stripping for somebody, flashing somebody, or dashing away from somebody?
Yes.
I'm dashing away from everybody. This isn't a game I can play.
All right, well, here's the scenario, okay?
All right, okay.
A former NFL player accuses you of having the hidden immunity idol. B, you're trying to flirt your way into a better position in the game while on a hot tub reward. Or C, okay. Jeff Probst offers you peanut butter and chocolate.
Okay, or Jeff Probst offers me peanut butter and chocolate just like out of nowhere or during a challenge.
I think it's on the table. You suspect that your new BFF, Jeff Probst, has peanut butter and chocolate.
All right. Well, clearly I'm dashing to the peanut butter and chocolate.
No, I think
why
you dash
I?
Away. I don't think you dash to
Why would
to
I dash
it?
Away from it? I want it. I want it. I want the peanut butter and chocolate.
Well, I get the sense that you have to at least strip or flash if you want the peanut butter and chocolate.
I think that the desire for peanut butter and chocolate would probably override those instincts. I feel like I would just probably unnecessarily use it. I think I would just go for it. I would just run and take it. So now I have to figure out the flash or the full strip down. Man, I've left myself in a. I've painted myself into a corner here. I feel like you got to strip down at spa day. Like that's a thing you do. I feel like that's a move. Like if everybody else is stripping down at spa day, you don't want to be the one person who's like awkwardly not stripping down. So I'll strip down at spa day and I'll give a flash to Alan Ball. Just a quick look.
All right.
And then I don't think it would be enough to convince him that I don't have the idol anyway. So, you know, you just get a peek.
And then one final brain buster. Okay. A, Keith Nail has a tuk-tuk ride for you. B, Nick Majorano invites you on a pizza date.
Uh-huh.
Or C, you meet Devin Pinto in preseason interviews.
Strip it all off.
For Devin Pinto.
Take it off. You know, I'm a man crush of the moment kind of guy right now.
Okay.
So all due respect to Nick Majorano, but all he's getting these days is a flash.
Okay. Oh, it's a flash. And then you're running away from Keith Nail in the tuk-tuk.
I'm running into the tuk-tuk. I know that I'm resisting the rules. My dashes have been used to run toward the thing I'm supposed to run away from.
Okay.
I'm running straight to the tuk-tuk so I can get on that thing.
Okay.
I don't think that I would get on the tuk-tuk if I stripped or flashed Keith Nail.
Yeah.
I think my only option is to run onto it.
Also, just by the way, just to bring this all together, Alan Ball had a secret scene where he accused JP of doing the tuk-tuk with the idol, and that's why it didn't come out during the strip search.
That's a move. That's a thing you can do, I guess. Where do you land on this? Is Alan
the tuk-tuk?
Is Alan like crazy like a fox? Or just crazy. Like, where
crazy
are you at
like
with
an Eddie Fox, maybe.
Or an Emily Fox.
Yeah. No, I believe that this is not a plot. I don't believe that he has gone out there with this plan where he's saying, okay, I'm going to go to great lengths to put this proactive lie out there that JP has the idol. I think that he is very paranoid about the two of them. He believes they do have the idol, and sort of like the worst case scenario downside for him is maybe they don't, but I'll at least make everybody think that they do. But I do believe in his heart of hearts, he thinks that they have the idol.
I have been thinking about Alan Ball quite a bit over these past few Whoa. Months. Because I went from being very impressed by him to very quickly
very
thinking to very quickly being deflated.
Deflated. Oh no, a deflated ball.
Deflategate. And I have just been on the edge of my seat wondering, is Alan Ball actually a secret genius, or is he just losing his mind? And is there any way, in either case, to truly rebound from this? Because I was trying to think.
Rebound the ball.
Right. I was trying to think. I know that's not something you do in football. I was trying to think.
What do you do with the basketball?
It's something. He's not a basketball player. Now we're mixing. We're lost in the woods here. I was trying to think in the immediate aftermath of that tribal council. Has anyone, one survivor in that given season, having had such a terrible first tribal council where you were just looking like a really, really crazy person? And the closest that I could come up with was Cochran in South Pacific, you know, going insane in that first tribal council, but then he only wins, you know, he wins seasons later.
Right.
Who goes nuts or has a really bad look in that first tribal council and goes on to win the season? Like, who has such a bad first 3 days of the game and then goes on to win? And I'm drawing a blank. Do you have anybody for me?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I mean, when first went out, you guys talked about Richard and Sonia and how Richard was almost the first person. And I mean, he did get votes at that first tribal council, but he did not have a disastrous first tribal council.
Who made a scene? Who had like an outwardly objectively bad tribal? Who had an outwardly objectively bad first 3 days
and
of the game?
Not even at their first tribal council, but they, I mean, Chris has a pretty bad first 3 days where he's sort of like talked about as a person who might go out in Vanuatu, but I don't remember if he had like a sloppy first tribal council.
I think his tribal council was pretty good.
Yeah,
like I think he was pretty decent at that tribal council. I think he, you know, felt empowered that he had, you know, the Fat Five on his side here, so he was going to be okay. But I mean, like, maybe that's the example. My point is that I'm you know, we're one episode into this thing, but I was very ready that night. Who knows how Alan is going to do moving forward? If he is going to go out immediately after this, or if he's going to hang in there for a long time? But I feel fairly prepared to say, I think Alan Ball has zero chance to win Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers.
Spencer has zero chance of winning this game.
And Alan Ball. Okay.
And Alan Ball. So I know that's the anti-Parhar position, I think. It's the extreme opposite
well,
of Jordan's stance.
I believe that Jordan's position on the RHAP B&B was Alan Ball was the MVP of week one because he saved us from what could have potentially been a very mundane first episode. And while the Tribal Council was not a exciting big moves vote, we did get a lot of excitement out of the idol strip search.
I thought that Alan was highly entertaining in this episode.
He brought it.
He brought it, but I don't think that he's going to be able to close the deal here. I just think that he's too far out on a limb. I don't know that you can walk that back this early on.
So exciting to be back here in the Wiggle Room with you here in week one.
Yeah, man. And you know what else is exciting?
What's that?
We're not alone.
We're not alone. Why?
We're not.
Who's here?
Alone. We're not alone. So if you'll recall, the Wiggle Room, when it was first founded in as a podcast, at least during Survivor Ko Rong, every week I would bring you some sort of hot exclusive. Whether it was from Chase Rice, or it was from Aaron Riceberger, or if it was from your friend and mine, Wanda Shirk, we always had something. We always had something to bring to the Wiggle Room. Very close to the same deal for Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. I don't think it was every week, but I think it was most weeks that we were able to bring you an exclusive. Survivor Game Changers, unfortunately, was exclusive free. Wanda had written in to me to say that she needed a break. She was not ready. She was sitting out of season. She was recharging her energy, and hopefully she would come back.
Well, she was mad that she was a game changer and they didn't invite her back for that season.
She was pissed. She was upset. She was very upset. I actually didn't hear from Wanda all summer long. I had written to Wanda because I had First One Out in development. And Wanda's, you know, kind of a First One Out of sorts. You know, her and Jonathan Libby kind of co-share that title of like the first people just dropped from Palau. And she didn't get back to me. She did not reach out to me. She did not apparently want anything to do with me. I think maybe she didn't like that I was growing close with Sonia Christopher. Maybe that was something that was rubbing her wrong. But I was persistent because Ryan Ulrich, not Ulrich, held me to task when I interviewed him in the preseason. He said, I don't want to hear that Wanda is sitting another season out. I want Wanda to come back to the Wiggle Room. So I've begged, I've pleaded, and I'm very happy to reveal that Wanda's up for it. Wanda's back. Wanda is making a Wiggle Room return this season. We've reconciled. We've hashed out our differences. We've hashtagged out our differences. And she
not
has said
psych, it. Not this. You're not going to say like, no. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. False alarm.
No bazinga. No, you got pastored. This is legit. Wanda is here. She listened to First One Out. She was really into it. She was really taken with the story of Katrina Radke. And so she decided to write a little bit of a quick ode to Katrina. So let's rip the lever. This is Wanda's ode to Katrina Radke and her grand return to the Wiggle Room.
Wiggle Room exclusive time.
Hit it, Wanda.
First one out this season is hero Katrina Radke. Katrina Radke, the star of First One Out, the superstar Olympic athlete. Katrina Radke. Alan lost his mind. JP showed his big word out behind. At least you got a podcast, so try not to feel too badly. Katrina Radke.
Hey, all right. The Mari Takahashi remix.
Yeah, I was just going to say, didn't Juan already do that one?
It's her remix. She's going back to the well. Well done, Wanda. Thank you.
Wow.
We salute you, Wanda. Keep on shining.
That was good, but like she really, I mean, she straight up did that one before. I don't know. Okay, I guess she's, you know, a little rusty, so we'll see how that goes throughout the season. But Wanda's back. She's here, busting out the Mari Takahashi remix for Katrina Radke. She would also like to issue a challenge,
not
Rob.
Not Calamari Takahashi.
No, not Calamari Takahashi. Wanda would like to issue a challenge, Rob.
Yes.
Wanda would like to challenge the Wiggle Room listeners. If you think that you can produce a song in 60 seconds or less that would rival Wanda on any
the
given
time.
Week.
They can spend as much time as they want on it, right?
Yeah, you can spend as much time as you wanted. Runtime, do not exceed 60 seconds, and ideally 30 would be great. But if you would like to toss a song into the Wiggle Room ether to challenge Wanda to a Wandoff. If you want to get in on the Wandoff, we're going to be having Wandoffs all season long here in the Wiggle Room.
How do we decide the Wandoff? Do we let the listeners vote? Like, I'll put out like a Twitter poll after the episode.
I think that's the move, and we can reveal the results in the subsequent episode. I think that that's the way to do it. You guys tell us who wins the wand off. Is it Wanda, or is it the challenger? And the challenger does not have to try and do their best Wanda impersonation.
No
one's going to sing quite like Wanda. It can be anything you want. As long as it's related to Survivor, as long as it's related to the episode of the week, all free reign from that point forward. You can take it to Wanda. You can see if you've got what it takes to win the wand off. The Wiggle Room wand off is going to be a thing.
Okay, very exciting. Of course, you can also email the Wiggle Room, wiggleroom@robhasawebsite.com, if you have any thoughts or anything you want to hear Josh talk about on a given episode of the Wiggle Room. Very excited to be back and rolling. And of course, we have a very exciting week of podcasts coming up this week, Josh. So a little bit of a wrinkle in the schedule has led to. Stephen Fishback is not going to be with me on Survivor Know-It-Alls this week, but I am going to have somebody with me as a co-host who was mentioned earlier on this podcast, and that would be
Keith Nail?
No. But she did play on a tribe with Keith Nail at one point, and also played on a tribe with Stephen Fishback, and Chaos Cass McEwen is going to join me on the Know-It-Alls this week. But don't worry, if you love Stephen Fishback and all of the ways that he corrects people's grammar, that's such a fun thing to do, that Stephen Fishback will be with me on Thursday as my guest on this week's recap. So we will be sort of switching the order around. Stephen Fishback is going to join me on Thursday. We could do a little bit of a deeper dive into things than we're able to do on the Survivor Know-It-Alls. Don't forget, the Survivor Match Game is coming up. If you want to be there with us in person at the Hollywood Improv, you can still get tickets. Go to robhasawebsite.com/matchgame. We'll bring you the podcast and the video of that. And then Akiva Whitaker is my co-host on the brand new Curb Your Enthusiasm post-show recap, which we'll be recording later on today. He will be my guest on The Voicemail. And Josh, that's not all.
No, because once again, Rob, here in the Wiggle Room, we're not alone.
Yeah.
Yes, we're not alone. In addition to Wanda, who will be with us every week here in the Wiggle Room this season, we are opening the Wiggle Room to guests. We are inviting people into the Wiggle Room. Not every week. We're not going to have a special guest every single week, but every other week, every couple of weeks, however that's going to work out. We're going to bring in former Survivor castaways. We'll bring in commentators. We'll bring in all sorts of fun people from the Survivor universe into the Wiggle Room. And I'm very excited to announce who our first guest of the season is going to be. Somebody who will actually be at the match game, Rob, I believe.
Yes.
And somebody who is a fan favorite of Chevy Chase Rice. Let's hear who's going to be our first Wiggle Room guest.
I found out long ago first guest of the season is Aubrey Bracco. Whoa. Aubrey Bracco. Oh. Aubrey Bracco.
What a week. What a week for Aubrey Bracco. She will be with us on the match game on Thursday night. And then I guess we'll have a chance to tell whatever fun stories come out of that this next week on The Wiggle Room with Josh Wiggler. So looking forward to that.
Can't wait.
And
it's
again,
be fun.
If you want to be with us in person for the match game, go to robhasawebsite.com/matchgame. We're working on also planning a after party after the match game if you want to join us for some drinks after the show. robhasawebsite.com/matchgame. Josh, that also one other thing to mention, that we have the blogs in full effect on robhasawebsite.com. We've got basically Survivor coverage every single day. We have on Fridays Logan Saunders recapping Survivor Triple H, as talking about Chrissy, his winner pick, and how well she's done in 3 days on the show. Christian Williams is back with the Diplomatic View this season. On Monday, Catherine Lucas is looking at the mom squad and compares Chrissy to another cutthroat Survivor mom. On Tuesday, Matt Liguori is going to be continuing his blogging from the Big Brother season. And this week he has is going to be joined by guest commentator Dom Harvey. And Logan Saunders has the Australian Survivor blogs all in the blog section of robhasawebsite.com. Go to robhasawebsite.com/blogs for that. Josh, do we have a hashtag today?
Ooh, hashtag ride or dive was in there for a minute.
Hashtag full tilt sprint.
Yeah, the full tilt sprint fan favorite of the episode goes to Alan Ball for sure. For freaking sure. I'm good with full tilt sprint.
A full tilt sprint or full tilt sprint fan favorite.
Depends on how many characters you want to use.
Hey, if you're they're one giving of the you people, 280.
I know.
We're using them up in the hashtag.
If you've got 280, go for the full thing. Go full tilt sprint fan favorite.
Impress your friends. Full tilt sprint fan favorite.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Great. Great stuff, man. Very psyched to be back here in the Wiggle Room, and I'll have all sorts of other Survivor shenanigans coming your way at THR. Gonna keep doing a weekly Probst column on Wednesday nights after the West Coast airing of the episodes, plus exit interviews on THR.com/Survivor. So tune in to all that stuff. I hope you like it. And I'm just pumped, man. I've been waiting for, like, this episode, episode 2 of Triple H, has been, like, my most anticipated episode of Survivor ever. Because I have no idea where we're going now.
You and people complaining? Oh, I have to wait 7 days to see what happens next. Josh has been waiting for 7 months.
It's a long wait. It was a long wait. It was a long wait. So I'm psyched for that to end. And I just can't wait to see how this season plays out with a bunch of people who I really enjoyed getting to know. Can't wait to see how badly they play or how well they play, hopefully, in a bunch of cases. I think it'll be a really fun season, or at least I certainly hope so. So my expectations are high. Don't let me down, Triple H'ers.
And also, one last time, thanks to Randy, Sam Moore, and Shannon Gates for their help with some of the games that we played today here on The Wiggle Room. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Wiggle Room exclusive time.
Hit it, Wanda.
First one out this season is Hero Katrina Rad. Katrina Radke, the star of First One Out, the superstar Olympic athlete. Katrina Radke, Alan lost his mind, and JP showed his big blurred